Penguin Random House Audio presents Sicilian Avengers, Book 2, by Luigi Natoli. Translated from the Italian by Stephen Riggio. Afterword by Umberto Eco. Read for you by Eduardo Ballerini. Part 1. Chapter 1. On the afternoon of October 24th, 1714, a public ceremony took place at Sant'Ufficio. The day before, the first procession marking the beginning of the auto da fe had come out from the Palazzo Steri. At its head was a procession of cavalieri, followed by the Prince of Cattolica carrying the red banner of Santa Fede, the Compagnia dell'Assunta with lit torches, the poor houses of lost children and orphans, the friars, the parishes, the Congregazione della Pescagione, whose standard was carried by the Prince of Montevaco, and the Cavaliere Filingeri, carrying the white cross. Then came the judges of the Tribunal of Sant'Ufficio, army officers, musicians, and the green cross carried between lit torches by a priest wearing a cope. The procession went slowly up the Cassaro until it reached the piazza of the cathedral, where above a large stage about 8 palms high, lodges and benches had been built for the celebration of the Act of Faith. On one side were the lodges of the Inquisitors, set higher than all the others, on the other was the one for the Senate. In the center was the bench for the accused. In the remaining space were the altar and the pulpit. Other lodges were designated to accommodate the magistrates of the kingdom. The procession climbed onto the stage, walked around it until the priest placed the green cross above the altar, then went back the same way. This was the first function of the auto da fe, to which that improvised stage was consecrated and all but devoted to. On the day of the ceremony, the procession was repeated, but with some differences. The Compagnia dell'Assunta led the procession without torches, and then there were the friars and priests, also without torches, and after them came the Alcade on horseback. The friars of Pescagione carried weapons instead of torches, and between them walked the accused, who were 20, behind whom followed the captain of Sant'Ufficio on horseback, accompanied by cavalieri, and then the councillors, the canon lawyers, the distinguished members of the tribunal, the delegated standard-bearer Teodoro de Lorenzo with the crimson banner of Santa Fede, and finally, majestic and solemn on their mules, the three inquisitors, one after the other, flanked by nobles and senators and surrounded by the viceroy's halberdiers. The entire Cassaro was swarming with people, poor, and for the most part from the provinces, ignorant and superstitious, or frenzied and hysterical, who wanted to see the accused. Another throng packed the piazza of the cathedral, becoming denser on the Cassaro. In the balconies and windows of the palazzi overlooking the piazza, another crowd sparkled with silk and jewels. It was the nobility, who were used to attending, as the chroniclers of the age expressed it, with the most exquisite pomp to celebrate the triumph of faith. The nearby piazza of the Palazzo Reale and the street behind the Duomo were filled with carriages and portantine. When the procession arrived at the piazza of the cathedral and climbed onto the stage, it offered an imposing sight to the eye. From the height of the loggia, which looked like a throne, the three inquisitors of the kingdom held sway over the crowd, and it truly seemed that supreme power and total authority was in their hands. Around them, heads were bowed in fear. The Senate itself, which at times dared to challenge the viceroy's authority, bowed submissively to the solemn and imposing majesty of that gloomy tribunal. The accused sat on the steps opposite the pulpit. The friars of Pescagione accompanied them there one by one, and they looked around, either astounded or confused, some feeling awkward, all of them with a certain trepidation at the sight of so much apparatus. At first, they had the men sit down, among whom were two or three who wore the frock of a friar, then the women, a Franciscan, a nun, 4 peasants, and the last one a civilian, dressed in black, extremely pale, who held her head down as if to hide her face. Only when she sat down did she raise her eyes to look over the crowd, as if searching for a familiar face there, and then she lowered them again, full of tears. It was Signora Francesca. The sermon began. A Dominican friar, with emphatic gestures and voice, after a laudatory apostrophe to the majesty of the tribunal and a praise to the greater devotion and exemplariness of the nobility present, talked about the Christian faith and divine mercy, which was the inspiration for the holy tribunal and could turn into dismay and terror only through stubborn heretical depravity. And he continued for about an hour in that tone, railing with grand locutions and feigning great emotion against the offenders, whose sins, although not deserving of more serious punishments, were nevertheless very grave offenses to the sanctity of religion and misdeeds in the sight of God. There were people who were moved at the description of the dreadful sentences and cried. Signora Francesca seemed petrified by her suffering and showed no sign of life. She seemed to be searching for the reason why she was on that stage, and what those vehement words had to do with her. When the sermon ended, another friar read the proceedings one by one, calling the offenders who went to listen to the reading below the pulpit, and at the end they confirmed their declarations of submission to the sentence of the Holy Tribunal. Four of those unfortunate ones accused as heretical blasphemers, who had recanted de levi, were condemned to be taken along the street in shame, wearing the muzzle, and exiled from their towns and neighborhoods, some for 1 year, some for two or three. A fifth, an Augustinian friar from Caltagirone, a sorcerer and heretical blasphemer, was sentenced to reclusion in a convent. Two bigamists came after him, one from Girgenti, the other from Patti. They were condemned to the lash along the streets and to the oars for 3 years. The other friars and deacons were guilty of sorcery and doing business with the devil and of speaking of heretical concepts. Sant'Ufficio condemned them to reclusion for 5 years, some in convents, others to imprisonment in Sant'Ufficio. Then came the women. Some old ignorant ones guilty of doing business with the devil and of sorcery were condemned to the lash along public streets and to imprisonment. One named Barbara, witch, heretic, and sorceress, had the greatest sentence. Paraded in shame along the streets, 200 lashes and 5 years in prison. The reading of these proceedings and sentences continued with a cold and ponderous monotony. Those pillories, those public lashings, conjured up sorrowful sights, not infrequent at the time, that left a shameful mark on those who suffered them. The souls accustomed to this felt no pity, and their eyes looked on with curiosity. Perhaps in secret some lamented the plight of the victims, but they dared not express their own feelings for fear of appearing insufficiently Catholic. When Signora Francesca's turn came, a certain movement of curiosity was noted in one part of the crowd. Named as one being prosecuted for the accusation of being part of the sect, the surname of Ammirata made the wife an interesting subject. Everyone was looking to see if the wives of the Beati Paoli had some mark, some special coat of arms that was like a seal for the mystery that surrounded the sect. She rose up unsteadily and listened to the proceedings, in which, amid the Latin wordings, a mixture of religious invocations and cruel judicial phrases, it was stated that owing to well-substantiated evidence, the named Francesca Mirata, native of Palermo, was proven guilty of having blasphemed, of having spoken about heretical concepts, and of doubting God and his divine providence. That during the trial, far from acknowledging divine justice and the sacred character of the Holy Inquisition, she had obstinately uttered offensive words and revealed a soul inclined to depravity. And finally, that she had given justifiable reasons to believe that she belonged to the sect of the Beati Paoli, which was usurping a property of the Church and making use of rites that were considered detrimental to the Holy Faith. However, persuaded by the eloquence of the spiritual fathers appointed to convert her, Signora Francesca Mirata had renounced her faults, submitting herself to the provident justice of the Holy Tribunal, which condemned her to public shaming with 50 lashes, to be administered in designated sites with the customary ritual, and to 3 years of confinement in the prison in Sant'Ufficio. At the reading of the dreadful sentence, Signora Francesca fell to her knees, raised her hands to the sky, and cried out, "I swear in front of God who can see us that I am innocent! I am innocent!" And from a corner of the piazza a voice exclaimed, "This is an infamy!" But this voice, heard only by those close by, didn't spread. It provoked a movement of surprise in that corner. The nearest forum members of Sant'Ufficio set upon it, scandalized that anyone would dare to offend the majesty of that moment. The reading having ended, the guilty were consigned to the captain for the carrying out of the sentences, and the procession resumed its journey toward the Palazzo Steri, where it disbanded. It was about 4:30, and the punishments were beginning. The guilty, placed on top of carts with a mitre on their heads, their shoulders bare and their arms tied behind their backs, were flagellated by the executioner and his assistants. The cart stopped in front of the archbishop's residence in Piazza Bologna at the Quattro Canti, in front of the Vicaria, and in front of Sant'Ufficio, where the condemned were set down.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?